And welcome to the podcast that, well, I don't know, always reads correctly what's in the envelope. It's Best Film Ever. My name's Ian.
And I'm Hermes.
Yeah, that's what we got today. We got us a little bit. Hey, you want a more polarizing discussion? Here we are. Doing a little pre-Oscar talk as, it's the Oscars tonight, I'll say in finger quotes. As we record it, it's the Oscars tomorrow, but yeah, we're going to turn around this pretty quick. So it's the Oscars. It's Oscar weekend. That's the best way I can put it. Oscar weekend. I'm, for the first time in years, I'm excited about it. How are you feeling about it?
I'm about the same. I the Oscars mean a little bit to me in terms of what I'm going to check out. I had to, you know, check out all the movies for Best Picture kind of a thing. But outside of that, I'm not going to watch it. I don't plan to.
I know. Oh, man, it was always go-to viewing in my house. Like, I was the guy who was printing out the Oscar pool sheets. And I would make my mom had no clue. She's like, yeah, all right, here's some things. And my sister, in the years that she would participate, I'd go ahead and go through that and live and die with each category. I think even then I needed something, some sort of competitive thing. You know, can't you just enjoy football? Nope, got to be fantasy. Can't you just, nope, got to print out a sheet. But the Oscars were, it was a signifier. It was an indicator to me, maybe a bit of an educator to me about here are the big actors, here are the best big directors, here is what I guess at least one form of the Hollywood elite describe as quality in filmmaking. And so it did sort of curate a shortlist for me, I guess, if you will. I don't know. There was moments where Oscar TV was must see. I mean, you know, Roberto Benigni making love to the Oscar, Jack Palance doing push-ups up on the stage, in ways that felt organic and natural and not whatever the last 5 years have been. So, I don't know. You don't. So, I mean, I don't need to get into the whole Will Smith thing. I think that's been covered. It just feels. I mean, didn't we all think for a moment it was produced?
I mean, that's the thing with watching highlights again. Because if I'm not watching it live, which, you know, just like the Super Bowl, I'm still, that's going to be my thing because I don't appreciate the commercials and the ads and all that. So, so seeing the highlights, it was like. It was already, the conversation already started and it was confirmed. So I missed that whole, was it fake? Was it not, you know, moment, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, say what you will. I don't have FOMO when with stuff like that.
No.
I don't know. Same thing with the Oscars this year. I mean, I hope nothing else happens, but.
Well, now living in the UK, like I'm staying up. There's no way I'm staying up to watch the Oscars. Like competitive sports is one thing, but just to watch people read names out of an envelope, I think I'm all right. But I woke up to a push notification about something happened at the Oscars, and I went and looked. And at first I was like, oh, no, come on. This is just an attempt to go viral. And it's not until he sits down and issues the famous get my wife's name out of your fucking mouth twice. And there's rage in that. And I went, oh, shoot. And then I, you know, found the highlight of him calling himself a vessel of love an hour and a half later. And I went, I think you've missed this, man. He's quoting Denzel, and they cut to Denzel, and Denzel's going to look on his face like, don't bring me into this.
Yeah. And then, I mean, what a moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was the La La Land Moonlight thing. And, you know, I believe with my very soul, that was a produced moment. It was just after Steve Harvey did the same thing for Miss Universe. It just reeked of, okay, look, we're going to have a thing here. And, yeah, because, you know, the card even reads Best Actress. So if you're Warren Beatty, his argument's like, I looked over to the side because it said Best Actress. Okay, you're Warren Beatty. You are a magnet, a mogul within Hollywood. You know how this game is played. You know you have the wrong card. You do. Mm-hmm. Then you go ahead and say, excuse, you don't just read out and then hope the right film won. It was designed to have a moment that then made everyone go, whoa, can you believe what happened at the Oscars?
Well, the superficiality of it all too, I think by creation, by design of the industry, if we want to blanket term it, you get caught with a lot of these, you know, like, you know, facades or these like, you know, I mean, what was it? This, I think it was this last one, or maybe it was a different, like a music award or something. And it cut to, Timothy Chalamet and who was he? canoodling with or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you're having this like artificial intimate moment, but there's a camera literally 6 inches from
everything's hyper real. Absolutely.
So it's like, what can you trust? What, and when are we not doubting which portion of this is legitimate? Yeah. You know, I think in just by and large, yeah, it's because show business is so produced and so much money is in the lights and the stage and the, you know, dresses and all this, that it's like, yeah, I'm always going to have that little bit of a, anything that happens. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. That was legitimate. Sure. That was real. No, it was all staged.
And the last bit of sort of whatever I'll bring up is a couple of years back, they rearranged the order because Almost Without Fail, the last award goes to Best Picture, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, they rearranged it and they put Best Actor last. Now, we're told that no one knows what the results are till you open the envelope. But I think we all went, okay, I think we all know who's winning, because that was the year that, oh my word, I'm blanking at the worst possible time. A gentleman who played Black Panther.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Chadwick.
Chadwick Boseman. Thank you.
Thank
you. We got there together.
I was hearing Boseman. I was like, that's not right. That's not right.
And you're going, like, what are you? Okay, so clearly if it's last, we know who's winning. And I was even a little bit, I even like Googled his name just now to make sure we got it right, which we did. I was even a little bit going like, oh, because I don't want to know. And I'm like, okay, it feels like you're just clearly setting this up. But the one thing you think then, if you're going to do that, then the fix had better be in. You know what I mean? You'd better know. Because what happens is that Anthony Hopkins wins out of nowhere, and you get a real awkward end to the Oscars and a real angry group of people who felt they'd been set up, and I can't really blame them on it. And it's like this attempt of the Oscars to go, we have to somehow create relevancy, and we'll try and produce it, even if we don't have it. And I think it's that glitz and that glamour and that excess and the superficiality you brought out. And you go, okay, if you're going to have that, it's interesting. I'm just watching the end of The Crown, the actual television series. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit where Imelda Staunton playing the Queen is talking to Tony Blair about how to modernize the monarchy. And his recommendations are like, strip everything back. Make yourselves really accessible and really relatable to the public. And in the end, she comes back and goes, no, people want the magic. People want the majesty. People want the mystery. And I guess it would be that is going to look, if you're the Academy Awards, you've got two choices. You can be the elite or you can be accessible, but those two things can't happen simultaneously. So which one do you want to be? So I'd rather they were just a bunch of pretty people making way too much money in these gorgeous clothes doing that and didn't worry so much about if they're on TikTok the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's tough for me because I don't know, the part of it where you're in, you know, like the walled garden or you're in the castle above the peasants kind of a thing. I don't know. It's like I can appreciate certain portions of the industry. I guess where I lie is more on the artist side of it. It's like I can appreciate the artistry. I can appreciate the commitment, the dedication, things like that. But once it starts to get to that inflated or that bloated area where it's like you said, where they're just making too much money, it's like, okay, well, your theater act, you know, your theater kids, you know, all my friends were theater kids. Like, are you $100 billion for the rest of time? I don't know. It's like, that seems a little gross. So I see the have your cake and eat it too aspect where maybe you just don't be gross. Maybe if you're sheltered your whole life, it's, you know, you can't help it. It's inevitable, but I don't know. Do your best to be decent, I guess. I don't know.
From your
balcony, if that makes sense.
Like, at least we're not giving out Oscars. Well, at least it's not been nominated as like a silent film anymore. Like when the artist won, it's like, okay, you guys are just being a little bit too cutesy here, aren't you? Yeah. And so I guess the flip side of that, though, would be this year's argument, which is, of course, there was one film that made a lot of money and people were expecting because everybody went and saw it. It should be leading the field in nominations. And you used a term on your podcast. And if you don't mind, I'm going to borrow it for a minute.
No problem.
There is this mindset that I believe you referred to as Barbie or bust. And, Yeah, it's a great saying. So, no, but the whole Barbie or Bust campaign that's happened this year, and going, look, here's the one movie, and yeah, if you want the Oscars to be accessible, you kind of go down this path. And I think something that I like about the Oscars this year, I'd be curious to get your thoughts on it, is I feel that in the wake of a time of very real social change in America specifically, but the world at large, when we start looking at things like what sort of stories do we reward, and you know, what is the makeup of these people we consider to be the elite, who's being represented in those discussions, I did feel personally there was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction of the Oscars to go, let's make sure that we're bulletproof from criticism on questions of inclusion. And my perspective's always been, I think the Oscars serve as a representation of what's happening in Hollywood as an industry. So the answer isn't in trying to make the awards fit that. It's trying to make, how do we make Hollywood fit that? And I feel this year, when I've looked at the awards and the nominations and who's up and looked at the films, I feel like they've got the balance right. Because I'm sitting here going, there's a wider variety of stories, I think, that's happened in the last couple of years specifically. But this year, I've noticed it where I've gone, there's a wider variety of stories that I can find at my multiplex. And as a result, those films seem to be getting nominated. I think they've, personally, I'm sitting here going, I feel real good about it. As opposed to previously, where I kind of felt like they were going, okay, can we get blamed on this? Do we, is there any group who will feel marginalized by this specific award or this next award? Now I think it just represents the awards, the nominations represent the industry as a whole, and because the industry has become more inclusive, then naturally the awards are becoming more inclusive.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
No, I think that's fair. And so if we're going to get to the core of it, is, do I disagree with this whole, with the shift that seems to be more or less merit and fair oriented, not necessarily on what the conversation at large, maybe on online or in, you know, around the scuttlebutt or anything, pushing for, right? Which would be this Barbie or Bust, or this maybe even feminist, you know, inclusion, empowerment, simplified. We have our thoughts, and we've discussed a couple times about that. And like, maybe it's a little, a couple blinders on, but the Oscars doesn't seem, at least thus far, and from the nominations, doesn't seem that it's going to be driven by that narrative. It's not going, it's not accepting that because of, like I said, the merit oriented. And is that kind of where we're both lying at right here? Where, yeah, I don't disagree with it.
Yeah, I think so. But I think for a couple of years, the Oscars allowed themselves to be driven by the narrative. Sure. And I think now they're kind of going, no, we can. Yeah. It seems like it's there now.
I wonder if it's funny, though. I mean, I feel like it's always driven, if you're saying not necessarily just the awards, if the awards are representative of the Hollywood,
yep,
if Hollywood is always driven by money, I think same reason why it was captured or was influenced that way is because the money was flowing in that direction. You know, there was a lot of pressure one way or the other. And if you're afraid of boycotts, you're afraid of, yep, you know, a bad press or whatever, overseas press, things like that. I mean, you change the skin tone of one of your characters when you show it in China, or you know, at large, or you change the sexual orientation if you're showing it overseas or something, and vice versa. You know, I mean, Brokeback Mountain didn't win Best Picture, as some argue, because of that reason. You know, there were a lot of judges who refused to watch it for homophobic reasons. So, and that's because, and I think similar to the conversation we're having now, why maybe we're both in agreement that merit has sort of come back, is because the money is pushing merit over this feminist push over Barbie or Bust, or maybe of this inclusion. Not to say right or wrong or otherwise, just I think, you know, if all the cards are out there on the table, I think it's just Hollywood is like putting its finger to the wind, and the wind is blowing this way because, and the money is blowing this way. Therefore, they're going to follow it that way.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I remember at one point, going back to not watching Brokeback Mountain, which is an interesting point, not one I was thinking we were going to touch on, was I remember at one point the deal was you only had to watch two films in a category to cast a vote. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, is staggering, because if you can talk someone into watching your film, you may have just won half the battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Was that on what was it, the last episode? You had mentioned it in one of the previous BFV episodes, and I was like, wait a minute, how was that legal? When was that ever? I mean, you're any judge on any show, you know, American Idol or something, you listen to all the contestants, you know, and you're like, okay, you were great, you were bad, you were good, you were okay. How is it that you were just like, no, I'm going to listen to two of these guys, and then I'm going to take a coffee break and come back and then rank 1 through 10, even or 1 through 5, even though I've only seen less than half? That's wild and ridiculous to me. It's almost like American Fiction where they had to read all the books. He's like, yeah, we could do a summary.
We just do 100 pages. I think we're all right. That's fine.
You know,
I'm just looking for the bit about watching here. Nearly 6% didn't watch the nominated films. Is that at all? Jeez. Yeah. At one point there was the rule. You had to do two, but I can't find anything right now. If I do, I'll tweet it out or something like that. So there we are. So on the flip side, though, I think this year, more than last year, more than the year before, I just found myself sort of having watched a couple of the early Oscar favorites and was home watching, just home in Canada. And something that North America does that Europe doesn't do nearly as well, or at least Britain doesn't, is there's just a lot more advertising for films when you go to commercial break. And so Poor Things was getting hammered over the head for me. So I was like, all right. And it was up for Golden Globes. And I was like, all right, that seems like it's a decent enough thing. It looks quirky. I like quirky. And suddenly it should be Travis out. And we went, yeah. And then, you know, it hit big on the Oscar noms. And went, hey, let's just keep going down this road. But I actually found myself watching. I think I've seen 7 of the 10 nominees for Best Picture. And almost all the ones in the sort of main big categories where you're at a 5. I think I saw on your Twitter that you said that, or maybe it was in the group chat, that you said you finally got around to seeing Poor Things. Is that because it just came out on Disney Plus?
Nope. I actually got it on Apple. I was meaning to get, that's usually how I watch a lot of these is on Apple. I have a, similar to yourself, of a rather large entertainment screen on my wall and a very good sound system. So I can get a decent experience. Obviously certain ones I'd prefer, like Dune 2, I saw in theaters. But yeah, I went what was it, like Poor Things, crap, American Fiction, Zone of Interest, one more, Holdovers. I did all from home, so I just bought them on Apple or rented them on Apple and then bought them afterwards. And so Poor Things was just the last one on the list that I knew was in the conversation that I just hadn't seen yet, so finally got around to doing it. I'm glad I did, for this conversation especially.
Yeah, it's good. I was looking forward to saying, hey, who's out there who'd be willing to talk about some Oscar sort of buzz and noms and all that stuff with me, and you were going to throw your hat in the ring, which I appreciate. And so here we sit today. So I thought we could kind of go through, I guess, the, you know, the main kind of awards that people are sort of most interested in. I mean, if you've really got a strong feeling about, you know, costume design, we can talk about that. But I thought we sort of hit the sort of the big ones that are most likely that probably a layman would go, yeah, I think I can talk about this or have a feeling about this. Obviously I think we'll leave the big one for the end, but I will say this. So Best Picture of a noms were American Fiction. I've seen that. Have you seen that?
I have.
Okay. Anatomy of Fall. You have. I haven't. Barbie, we've both seen, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
Holdovers, yeah, I believe you said you've seen that, and so have I.
Yep.
Killers of the Flower Moon, yep.
Seen it, yep.
Maestro, yeah, I've seen that.
That's the one I have not.
Oh, okay, interesting. Oppenheimer, I think we've both seen that.
Absolutely.
I have not seen Past Lives.
Also have not seen okay. that one.
I've seen Poor Things.
Korean film, I believe. Poor Things, yep.
Just and The that. Zone of Interest, I have not seen.
German film, yep. That as well.
Is that the one where it's like the German house that lives beside Auschwitz?
Mm-hmm. He's
yeah,
like the director of Auschwitz and goes every day.
Yeah, I was telling Carlo I would get around to seeing that at some point because it sounds really interesting. So there we go.
One way to put it.
Yeah, let's go with. Oh, I've done that and then I haven't talked. I mean, I could talk about Best Animated Feature Film, but I've only seen one of them. I don't know what your situation is. I've seen Elemental. I haven't seen any of the other ones.
Ooh,
Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, Spider-Man, Across the Spider-Verse.
Okay, so I saw parts of Elemental, didn't want to finish it personally.
Yeah.
Boy in the Heron, my wife saw and really, really, and my buddy, Bo really wanted to, wanted me to see it. They're like, oh yeah, you'd love it. And Robert Pattinson is a voice and all this stuff. I just haven't gotten around to doing it. And Spider-Man across the Spider-Verse was the one I actually have seen out of that list. Everything else doesn't even ring a bell.
If I'm not mistaken, Boy in the Heron won the BAFTA over here for that.
Okay.
Which kind of, I guess, puts it as the late favorite, I suppose, when you already beat it once, but you know how these things work. But yeah, it's a year where I really feel kind of underwhelmed by the usual animated fare. Maybe it's because maybe it's not fair me to do so. Maybe it's because I just happen to, you know, link myself to my expectation of great animation is going to be Disney and Pixar, and you know, off year, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, similar to dynasties in sports, right? There are dynasties in film and animated film for sure.
Yeah,
I think Pixar for me was. I mean, Across the Spider-Verse, that won Best Animated when it came out the year, I mean, 2 years ago, or whatever it was ago. And this one, I would say it just seems unfair to say that it would be my pick if I haven't seen the rest of them.
So let's talk about, this is going to be difficult. I've seen a few of these. Okay, we can do this. Best original screenplay. Let's do some writing. We'll do the two written sides of it. So Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May, December, Past Lives. So I've seen two. So according to Oscar regulations, I can vote on this.
I mean, technically previous, yeah, I can as well, but I wouldn't feel comfortable with
it. Well, I'll say if you gave me a 50-50 choice with a coin, I would say The Holdovers was a much better written film than Maestro was. That would be my read, for whatever that's worth.
I did enjoy Holdovers as well, but having not seen Maestro, comparing it to Anatomy of the Fall, I would still pick Holdovers.
Okay. So without a whole lot of maybe credibility, we're both saying we enjoyed the writing in The Holdovers, if nothing else. Mm-hmm.
Deserves to be nominated is what I think we're both saying.
Yeah, it feels like it was definitely a well-written film. I really thought it was a cleverly written film too. Then we get to Best Adapted, and I've seen four of the five, so I'm going to go ahead and weigh in. American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Zone of Interest. First off, Barbie does not deserve to be on this list.
What was it adapted from?
It's adapted from the intellectual property of Barbie and Ken's characters. Because if you're taking pre-existing characters, that's IP.
Wow.
Yep.
So if The Holdovers deserves to be nominated for original screenplay, yeah, if there's anything that doesn't deserve to be nominated for a category, I would agree Barbie does not. I've seen all of them in that category.
Like, I've got positive things to say about Barbie, but the writing's not one of them. I don't think it's written particularly well. In fact, I think it's written kind of hackneyed, if I'm being honest.
I don't disagree with you.
Oh, so
Poor Things as well. What is that? That was that adapted from?
I think it's a book. I think it's a book or something like that. Yeah. Okay. For me, it's not even close. I thought the most creatively written film I saw this year was American Fiction. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, so I remember you had a lot of positive words to say about American Fiction. I was middle of the road with American Fiction. I enjoyed it, and I think, yeah, it's definitely cleverly written. I think the dynamic, especially towards the end, no spoilers or anything, go check out your seat or skip it on it, but I think at the end it picks up more for me than it does in the first half, I'd say.
That's interesting because the ending's a choice.
Yeah, I like
choice, some might say multiple choices, but I don't know how I felt about it in the end.
Yeah, so Poor Things, if there's a term where it's a choice I was thinking of throughout the film, it was that film where I was like, well, I can see that you decided this was what you wanted to do. I don't necessarily think I agree with it. You know, a lot of, especially with like the cinematography, I'd have to, if it's based off a novel, I'm going to have to check out the novel and see how much liberty they took with it.
Yeah.
Or like how they had to play with initially as the source material. But yeah, I have some thoughts on Poor Things that I don't know.
Poor Things from a cinematography perspective, it reminded me, maybe we'll just jump to cinematography, but it reminded me of The Favorite. Did you ever see The Favorite?
Favorite.
Olivia Colman's the queen and has two serving women, one played by Rachel Weisz, I think it is, one played by Emma Stone. And Emma Stone is the new girl, the prettier girl. And there's all these sort of, you know, the relationship gets kind of, well, doesn't get kind of, it gets romantic or at least sexual. There's a lot of power involved in this as the queen chooses between Rachel Weisz, the serving woman who will always tell her, or lady in waiting, who will always tell her the truth, and Emma Stone, the one who will always tell her what she wants. And so why those two things could be appealing or unappealing, and how actually is it better for us sometimes not to get what we want. So that being said, really well written. The cinematography was weird. It was a bunch of fisheye lenses and really weird 180 degree pans. Oh, just really bizarre. And when I saw Poor Things, I went, this feels like it's two sides of the same coin.
Wonder if was there any connection between those that worked on one?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm literally just typing in right now. Oh my word, ready for this? It's the same director. I never thought to look until we started talking. And then sure enough, yeah, I was sitting there going, it's really visual. It's really similar from a visual perspective. And yeah, it's because it's Yorgos Lanthimos is the director for both those. Speaking of which, cinematography, the nominees are... El Conde, I have not seen. Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things.
Yep. So I've seen three of the five out of that one.
I've seen four. My vote would go to the one you haven't seen. My vote would go to Maestro.
Would it? Okay.
Really ambitious, large-scale cinematography. Whereas when we talked about Murder on the Orient Express, the Kenneth Branagh version, and we said there's some really ambitious cinematography, but it's there without reason. There's no reason to do this shot while as you're doing it, besides you're trying to show off. This one had a reason, and so that's why it went for me. What was your thought?
Well, so, yeah, I need to watch Maestro. I've heard... I need a, just like a American Fiction. I had heard some conversation around. I was like, I'm going to make my own decision. I need to see it myself to know where I stand.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen, you know, from trailers and the little bits that have come through, you know, even listening to your guys' See It or Skip It, is it not just a bit pretentious?
It's definitely got a sense of pretension about it, without question. And a lot of biopics do, but especially when the guy who's in the lead role is also the director, it's almost impossible for it not to come across as pretentious.
Okay. So I'm not off base here.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And that's just the initial turnoff. I'm saying why I haven't seen it. I mean, out of all the nominees, if that's your, I respect your vote and I respect your opinion on it. So I'm going to have to check out my scroll solely so that I can, compare it to Killers of the Flower Moon, because for cinematography, I think that's where, I mean, Oppenheimer was great and there's great. I mean, Nolan is a great director for, you know, like scale and especially practical, lack of CGI and practical design. But I mean, Killers of the Flower Moon, just most of it, if I remember correctly, were similar to The Revenant, were filmed, you know, like in natural light. And you can see it and like the warmth in a lot of the parties and the funerals in it is so,
yep,
is amazing. That stuck out to me from second one. So,
yeah, if I had a second vote, I would have gone for Killers of the Flower Moon. I think you're 100% right on that. Maestro is big and loud and busy. Much like the film itself, Killers of the Flower Moon's a little slow, a little somber, a little intimate, much like the film itself. So, yeah.
I would go with that.
Costume design. I have actually seen all five of them, so maybe we'll talk on it briefly. Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. Oh, side note, cinematography, I think Oppenheimer will win. This is what I think should win, just as a separate point there. I think Oppenheimer will win cinematography, but it should be, really? In my I think Oppenheimer is going to clean up. So
I do too, but cinematography,
I hope you're right or I'm right. I really do, but I don't think it's going to be the case.
Okay, fair enough.
Costume design, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. I happen to have seen all five. I think you're going to have a hard time for this not going to... Well, actually, I think the BAFTA went to Poor Things.
I can see. And Poor Things' originality compared to Barbie's originality in terms of costume design, as someone who's, you know... I wouldn't say the most knowledgeable on all the costume and what's the other one, set design or whatever. I see makeup and hairstyling here as a category. I don't know how all of these break down exactly, but if I had to pick one, I would go with Poor Things. Just the originality of that universe. It was like the steampunkiness. Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, when Barbie, it's just, hey, we took these dolls and we made them come to life, and look, everything even looks like it does in the dolls. Now, is that the brief? Probably not. I think I'm just saying, I think costume design and set designs, I think Barbie did best. So that's why I'm probably my first knee-jerk was to go that way. I think I am again going to join you on the Poor Things. Ben, I think you've talked me into it / reminded me of Poor Things. It was, yeah.
Mm, yeah. I mean, again, as far as categories go, I think Barbie deserves to be in that category. Yes, and if it wins, I don't disagree. Like, that seems like a legitimate win to me.
I would not criticize if Barbie wins. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah. Let's go. Oh, we're into the big ones now. Let's do supporting... actress. Let's do that. Actress in a supporting role. And the nominees are Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks, Color Purple, haven't seen it, America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Naiad, haven't seen it, Devine Joy Randolph, The Holdovers.
Okay, so yeah, I'm in a similar boat here. I've seen three of the five.
My first thought is, wouldn't you give it to, I don't know what your opinion was. I'd give it to Florence Pugh in Oppenheimer over Emily Blunt.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even understand that one. That's the hard part. Like, I think Emily Blunt's getting in here because she's Emily Blunt, I guess?
I think she has the climax and she had more lines.
She has that one big scene. Yeah. And there's an arc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably what it is. But yeah, as far as the impact of scenes... just because the Pugh had fewer lines and fewer scenes, I think the impact was much, much stronger. And the narrative that it, or yeah, the thread that it added to the narrative overall was, I mean, even Emily's scene where she's, you know, showing some emotion, and then prior to her, you know, big scene, it's sparked because of Florence Pugh's, you know, character there. So it's like you can't even have one without the other. So I would agree with you. I don't. That's actually a question. As someone who teaches film, is that like part of the criteria? Do you have to have a certain number of lines, certain number of minutes, seconds, scenes, something like that to be considered part of these?
Not really. It's just anybody who doesn't qualify as a lead can get a sort of a thing as supporting. I think the famous ones are Jack Palance was only on the film for like 8 minutes, and Judi Dench was only in the film for like 7.5 minutes of screen time. Like it's just ridiculous sometimes what you can do. But if you garner enough support and enough momentum, here you go. As opposed to Catherine Zeta-Jones, who's in Chicago for like 60 minutes or something like that. Like she could have easily been called a lead.
And so, that's where I've always been curious, like what's the cut between lead, supporting? I think
it's the choice. It's the choice of the film to enter people in the categories.
Okay.
So like Heath Ledger was, because I think Heath Ledger is the lead in The Dark Knight. I just do. But they chose to put him in for best supporting actor. Obviously it worked because he wins, but yeah.
It was a duality there, but.
No, I would say there's two lead actors in that film. I don't think one's a lead and one's a supporting.
I think he steals a show. I don't think he's a lead.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Similarly, I don't, you know, like a protagonist or antagonist characters. You know, it's like he does his role. He does it. I mean, it's different. This is different Oscar talk. What are we doing here?
Anyway, yeah. Who do you think's going for best actress in a supporting role?
If I had to pick one from the three that I have seen out of them, I'm going to go with Devine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers. I think she's amazing, especially in
that scene.
No spoiler. Yeah, that scene. Exactly. I mean, multiple scenes, especially in her reservation, and each scene is so different, you know, like the morning after that scene kind of a thing.
Yeah.
She has a great range and was fantastic in it.
But you keep thinking, shouldn't she be reacting to things a bit differently? And then she does. And you go, oh, okay. But it feels earned. It feels earned. It feels good. It feels believable. I've been at that party.
Yeah.
I've been in that kitchen. You know what I'm saying?
one too many.
Yes. And I think the buzz is that it's not even close. Like, she's going to take this in a walk. So all the power to her. Does America Ferrera deserve to be here?
No.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that for some reason they went, we got to give it to one of them, Margot Robbie or America Ferrera, so we'll give it to America Ferrera.
No, you don't have to. You should earn it.
That's the conversation.
There's plenty of movies out this year or this last year.
Now, my only danger is I haven't seen enough of them to go, well, I know that. So I haven't seen Jodie Foster and Naya to go, clearly a better job. But of the three I've seen, four I've seen, if I'm including Florence Pugh, who didn't make the cut, I would go America Ferrera is the worst of the four. So
I would agree with that, too. Yeah.
Let's go actor in a supporting role. That's a fun one. Another one that seems to be a bit of a slam dunk, depending on who you talk to. But Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, Barbie, Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. I've seen all five.
Yep.
All right. Feel pretty good then. I mean, Downey's winning it. Does he deserve to win it?
Ooh, so, yeah, it's... I can do process of elimination faster than I can pick my pick. Gosling, he's fun. He's great. And I enjoy Gosling. But as far as the, you know, the level that the rest of these guys are at, I'm going to say, sorry, Ryan. No. Mark, I don't think had a whole lot. I mean, he was more of like a caricature. I mean, it was funny at times.
He's fun. Like, he's I got no problem with him being nominated. He's not a winner, though.
I agree. So... And then Sterling K. Brown, that is his, like, is that his publicist or
no, Sterling K. Brown's his brother.
See, now that changes where my head is at. So between those three right there, I think his brother has a lot. I think it's a little Downey Jr. again, because he's in the climax and he gets short of, you know, he gets his curmudgeon. You're like, yes. And you didn't like him because of it. And therefore he did a good job. Out of all of them, I think the only one that's coming ahead, and it's not by a huge margin, but if I got to feel confident in it, I got to go with De Niro.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't want to go with De Niro at first. As I was thinking about it, I was like, De Niro's always good. He's older. He didn't do, I wouldn't say it's like his standout performance, like Hopkins does in, was it The Father? That he won, like you said, against Chadwick Boseman.
That's The Father, yeah.
So I didn't want to go with De Niro, but comparing the three and doing that process of elimination, I think it does have to. But if it was Downey Jr., I wouldn't be mad either.
Yeah, I am going Downey Jr. I think he's trying to remind us all, hey, don't forget, before I was in the MCU, I was a really good actor. And I think he had a chance to show this off. And the hard part is he's got to make you forget that he's Iron Man. And that's not easy after a decade and a half of doing it.
Yeah.
I'm with you on Ruffalo. I'm like, yeah, he deserves a nomination. I was really big on Gosling in Barbie. Now, do I think eventually you're going to hit your head on that? I do. And when you're talking about some of the stuff we got here, I think you are. And I'm hoping I'm not punishing it because it's kind of like a comedy. I don't think I am. I don't think I am. It's weird because this is the Oscar that more often than not tends to go to the person who doesn't have one yet, doesn't it?
Oof.
Like Robin Williams got his. Now, granted, Robin Williams was fantastic in Good Will Hunting. But it tends more often than not. You go ahead and you find that Best Supporting Actor is a way to give the guy who doesn't have one yet. But if it's close, you go, who doesn't have one? it becomes a lifetime achievement award. And I think because I think De Niro's success is absolutely gonna kneecap him in this one.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I can see why that might be the rationale. At the same time, I hope it's not. Again, I'm all merit based. Like who did the best job is where my head is always at. So I hope that's not the
case. If it's down is my pick. If it's De Niro, I'm okay. I'm with you. Actually, I really liked him in this. If it's Sterling K. Brown, I'm okay with it. It would be a surprise for me, but I could get around it. I'm not Gosling or Ruffalo. I might go. I think you made a mistake.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Let's go actress in a leading role. Barbie or bust. Let's just tackle it right on the nose, shall we? So we're looking at Annette Bening in Naiad. I love Annette Bening, but haven't seen this. Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon. Sandra Hüller, I hope I'm saying that right, Anatomy of a Fall. Carey Mulligan, Maestro. Emma Stone, Poor Things.
So, having, yeah, seen 3 out of the 5.
Same.
I know you were big into Poor Things and Emma Stone.
Yeah.
I wasn't. I think she does a great job.
Isn't that what the award is?
So to nominate her for actress, I don't disagree with.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think she – again, am I like faulting it because I found it too comedic or too, you know
– surreal?
Surreal. Like, am I faulting her for that? I mean, I don't think it's that – again, correct me if I'm wrong, as someone who's not an actor – you could speak on this more than I can. I don't think it's that hard to mumble and whine and, you know, walk with your knees locked for the first 25 or so minutes. That's just me.
It's like acting drunk. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I'm rubbish at it. So yeah, people can do these things, but to do it where it doesn't feel like someone's acting, that's the rule. It's like actors who can act like they're bad actors or bad dancers or bad singers who are good actors, good singers, good dancers. It's a really hard skill to do and make it believable. Right. And she's doing one thing verbally and another thing physically. So for me, this is the nuance. I will say that the 3 that I've seen are worlds better than Margot Robbie, just for the record, just to keep prodding at that. Yeah, like it's not even like a small gap. Like it's a wide chasm between what these three are doing.
It's not even in the same conversation.
Not even the same conversation at all. So that's that. I will say I really liked both Lily Gladstone and Carey Mulligan. And I think when it came down to it at the end, I was even sort of tipping Carey Mulligan ahead of Lily Gladstone. But I thought all three of these in a different year, all three of them, these are Oscar worthy performances. I thought Oscar winning worthy performances. It's just bad luck. They're all up against each other.
I mean, stiff competition as it should be. So that again, the best can win. I need to see Maestro to throw my hat in for or against Mulligan, but she always is great. I've never been disappointed by
her. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything else. I didn't see, was she in Promising Young Woman or whatever it's called?
Promising Young Woman. That sounds familiar and correct, but the movie I'm trying to think of, I'm trying to place her. She wasn't. I always confuse her in my head with Heath Ledger's ex-wife,
Michelle Williams.
Williams, thank you. And so I don't want to. If I pull up her actual like,
I'm looking myself. I've seen her in some stuff, like, but I don't remember. I don't remember Wall Street: Money Never Sleeps, but I have seen it.
Drive with Ryan Gosling. She was pretty good at that.
Oh, is she like the female lead in that, or is she something else?
No, she's a mother. Yeah, and
okay.
Brothers. She with if it's the one I'm thinking of with.
Oh, she's in Gatsby. I've seen her in a lot actually.
Gatsby, that's another one. Yep.
She is in Promising Young Woman. I remember that part. She's in Saltburn. I haven't seen that yet.
Saltburn. Oh yeah, you don't have to see that one. Mudbound, that was a good one.
She's in 2005's Pride and Prejudice. I saw that. It's disappointing, but I saw that.
Yeah, she does have that look about her too, like similar to when you brought up Gatsby. She has that 20s look.
She does have that 20s look about her. Yeah,
I think that's why she goes well with that. You know, like that
with all these period pieces.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's great though. I mean, I wouldn't say she's the top of my list. You know, she's not top five or anything, or at least sticking out of my head right now. But again, I've also never seen her do something bad. Like anything that I'm looking at in her list right here, I'm like, oh yeah, I did like that. Oh, she was good in that. Oh yeah, she did do a good job in that.
So I'm going Poor Things, Emma Stone. Where would you go?
I'm going to have to go with Lily Gladstone.
She's really good.
Just because of what I have seen, having not seen Mulligan, if you're tipping towards Mulligan, I really need to check it out. But yeah, from what I've seen, I'd say Gladstone.
Yeah, I think the marketing for Maestro hasn't been fair. I think it's been going Bradley Cooper, Bradley Cooper, Bradley Cooper, Bradley Cooper. And I'm going, Carey Mulligan's really good in this and deserves to be featured more in the promotional materials and the buzz in general. Yeah. So just my thought.
I hope so.
Actor in a leading role. Bradley Cooper, Maestro, Colman Domingo, Rustin, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. I've seen four.
Same.
Oh, so no, you've no. seen? Have you seen Rustin?
I haven't seen Rustin. Okay. Sorry.
Mixed so
Maestro in there.
Bradley Cooper is my fourth of four.
Okay.
He's good. He's good.
Everything.
He's good. I'm not as big on, because I think you said you were big on Giamatti. Am I right with that?
Yes, I loved him in that.
Yeah, I don't know what it was about it. It was it felt just a bit too indie cinema for me. Oh, I'm the curmudgeonly guy who's going to be won over by one of his I shouldn't blame him for the story he's asked to portray. I don't know if I ever got that he wasn't Paul Giamatti.
Okay.
You know what I mean by that?
Yeah. Similar to Robert Downey, you know, making it believable that he's not Iron Man.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that can happen. I don't think
anybody blew me away this year out of these five.
Blew me away. Again, having not seen Cooper, out of the three that are here in front of me that I can say that I've seen comparing them, the one that probably blew me away was Giamatti comparatively.
Because everybody's going nuts about Cillian Murphy, but I think it's just because he's the guy who's never been a lead before.
But that's the thing. I mean, I loved Peaky Blinders. I got used to seeing him for years.
I haven't seen Peaky Blinders.
And he's fantastic. And that was his, you know, that was like the thing for him. And I've always seen him, as a secondary role. And I always thought, he needs that leading role. And the role he got, I'm glad it was Oppenheimer. I'm glad the film overall was fantastic. And he does a great job in it.
Yes.
Great for the nomination.
Yes.
But comparing it, I mean, and the reason why I wouldn't put Jeffrey Wright beating Giamatti is because I've seen Jeffrey Wright really, really act. I mean, if you ever seen Manchurian Candidate, that will always, I always use that as my example of anybody who didn't know Jeffrey Wright. And when he became I recognized his name, and ever since that movie, I was like, whatever movie he's in, that actor, I'm keeping an eye on him, basically, and to see him continue getting bigger and bigger roles since then, because that was at most 30 seconds. Like, he's in the film for such a small amount of time.
Wow.
But he steals the show. I'm telling you, Ian, after this, definitely it's on YouTube. You can check it out. When he confronts Denzel Washington, it is – I mean, masterclass. And because I've seen him do that, just because he had the entire film to himself, and again, the film was great and he does a great job, I've seen him really push the envelope. So to see him, you know, in this situation, I'm like, unfortunately Giamatti does that basically for the whole movie. And I gotta go with that one personally.
I am gonna go with Jeffrey Wright. I think the Oscar is gonna go to Cillian Murphy, but I will go Jeffrey Wright. Who I think he plays three different like characters in that movie without any spoilers going sort of away there. But there's who he is, who he presents himself as, and then maybe who he is at his darkest moments. And I don't think those three guys are really that. I don't think it's three fast. I do think it's like three projections. So, I think he's great. I guess the kind of movie that's designed, I mean, the whole movie's, I mean, the one might be called Oppenheimer, but I mean, this movie's all about Jeffrey Wright. It's, you know, the lenses, the number of scenes he's not in is minimal. So, probably not different from Giamatti, but I don't know. I guess I thought Giamatti's arc was a little syrupy sweet. I don't know.
It hit me in the right way. The combination of like Perks of Wallflower mixed with Dead Poets Society.
Oh, yeah.
I liked Giamatti. I enjoyed the ups and downs of this and that. And again, the Randolph's character, you know, like the drama, the comedy, it had basically everything that I was looking for in my movie.
Hey, I'm a fan of Dead Poets Society too. Who wouldn't want to star in the remake of it?
I'm gonna give it to Paul.
So I mean, if he wins, he's a fine actor. He's a fine actor, and maybe it's one of those ones where, you know, Leo wins for Revenant, and you go, does Leo deserve it for Revenant? If you look at him versus the rest of his career, you're going, to Revenant's the one he wins for? Right. So whereas with the women, I'm like, all these are Oscar-worthy kind of things. I'm not sure we got one in the five. I really don't.
Yeah. Having not seen Rust and then Maestro, I mean, and – if you're still saying, yeah, Maestro is even at the bottom of the four that you're list that we're seeing here, then I'm not going to.
It's weird because I do think biopics are like fishing with dynamite a little bit. You know what I mean? And they can be pretentious and they can be all these things. Yeah. And this feels Maestro feels like the most Oscar baity movie I saw this year. Like it's very good, but it feels like Bradley Cooper's like, I'd like my Oscar now, please.
Okay. All the more. Again, this is the feeling I've had towards it, and why I'm like, I just haven't felt that urge. Like I need to see this.
Now, despite that, it's very good. That's the hard part, is that he's done this. It's very good, but I don't know if it ever. I'm trying to tell my students about how to write a good exam story, and I'm like, a good story to get the top marks, I need to forget that I'm marking. I need to forget that I'm marking a student's response and go, what a great story. Mm-hmm. And it feels like all the way through I'm watching someone go, this is a great Oscar film, and I'm going, I hear you. I never left that place though where I'm going, man, this is a really good Oscar quality film. So just two ones left, then we'll get out of here. These ones are really hard to sort of for a long time, even when I was ahead of film, I was saying to people, I don't know how to really articulate when I've seen a well-directed film. It's still not easy. It's still not easy because Best Director and Best Picture can almost be, can almost bleed into each other. I really struggled even, you know, I think it's one of those things we all pretend, or a lot of people pretend that they know what makes good directing, which typically goes into, this guy's directed a bunch of movies I like, therefore he's a good director. Now, why? Can't really explain. So this one, I think it helps that we've got people with very distinct styles here. But we've got Anatomy of a Fall, Justine Triet, Killers of the Flower Moon by Martin Scorsese, Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan, Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos, Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. I've seen three.
Four out of the five.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, Anatomy of the Fall was just seen. I just don't know what else she's done.
Okay.
So I've actually seen all of them.
Oh, have you really? Okay. I mean, so this is the thing where Scorsese, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get bloated narratives. They're going to talk about how far will you let yourself be corrupted in the pursuit of loyalty. Mm-hmm. That's a theme, and we're going to show that through three-hour massive time jumps and watch the slow corruption of a central figure. Oppenheimer, it's going to be scope. It's going to be, it's almost like a James Cameron sort of bigness that marries with, I mean, I'd say technical innovation, but that's also Cameron. And usually something to do with non-linear narrative structures. That's pretty much your Oppenheimer effect. Yorgos Lanthimos, you're going to be like, visually, I don't know what I'm looking at. And creatively, this is a little bit out there. Mm-hmm. So definitely the exact opposite to whatever I say, you know, blockbuster films or pizza. This is something completely different on your menu. And acting and creativity of those being filmed is at the forefront, and then we'll embellish it with all the technical aspects. I don't know what to say about Glazer or Trier because I haven't seen their films.
So as I was pulling them up, so I've seen and I really enjoyed Under the Skin by Glazer with Scarlett Johansson, but I hated Birth and I've never seen Sexy Beast. That's all that's, I mean, he did some short films and some music videos, commercials, but this, Zone of Interest is probably, not probably, is his best work. And it's going to be what he's like probably most noted for.
Oh, he did Sexy Beast. Okay.
Never seen yet. But
Ian McShane.
Only one I've ever seen. This was just out of left field. I was not, was not familiar. Again, probably why I'm like maybe overlooking it a little bit because I don't, to your point, like there isn't like the style that I can point to yet. I haven't seen enough of, and she hasn't even had that huge list to choose from to where I can say she, this is the style of it. Whereas, like you said, I mean, you're against Scorsese, Nolan. I mean, what was it? Lanthimos had, what was the other film I saw of his? So you said The Favorite, which I haven't seen, but The Lobster and The Killing of the Sacred Deer, both of those, Colin Farrell, I loved both of those, but for different reasons. And I now see the comparison, the connection with between his style in Poor Things and what I liked about those other ones and what I didn't like about Poor Things. I think it just worked and it was toned down a little bit differently, especially in like Killing of the Sacred Deer. And with like a thriller, you're kind of like, it's good to be a little out there and weirded out and uncomfortable as the audience. Whereas in Poor Things, I think, I don't know, it didn't work for me as getting to know the protagonist and getting these weird, like, okay, that was a choice, I guess. That's cool. You know? So I don't know. It's, if I'm impartial to anybody, especially in recent years, it's going to be Nolan. I mean, I don't think outside of Insomnia, I don't think the guy has missed in my opinion, whereas Scorsese seems to be tapering off, getting less and less effective as a director. I feel like he's getting, because he's that name, the studios are just like, go ahead. And it's like, no, that's not what that as an audience member, I'm not enjoying it. Less and less so. I'm, you know, enjoying it less and less.
I think it's been the same movie type for, we talked about, you know, those signatures, but you still got to bring something new to it. And it seems like in 40 years now of filmmaking, okay, now it takes place on a Indian reservation. Okay. That's the big move. I do like the ending. I thought it was very creative, but I thought it was for film nerds like me. I don't think it was. I think a mass audience might hate that.
of a Killers of the Flower
Moon. They hate it, the end of Killers of the Flower Moon, yeah.
His monologue?
Kind of where the narrative sort of the narrative storytelling structure and medium changes. Mm, yeah. Okay. So my big thing is I really love Poor Things. I love Yorgos Lanthimos. I think if it's more likely to win one of the two, it's going to win this. I hate to not give a win to Nolan, but I guess I'm hoping against hope. I can't split the two, basically. So the way I've done it is I've gone, I'm officially going Yorgos Lanthimos for director as my choice, even though I'm fully aware that Christopher Nolan's winning this.
That what an upset it would be, but I completely agree. And I,
if there's one that would be more likely to be upset, I think it's this over the award we haven't talked about yet. But yeah.
I'm still impartial. Like for Poor Things specifically, his direction in Poor Things, I would even rank it below Glazer in Zone of Interest.
Oh, really?
Zone of Interest is shot incredible. So kudos to, I mean, there's a lot of things I could say about Zone of Interest that I hope it wins for. And I think it should and probably will win for, but director, I think is a better, I could give a better argument for Zone of Interest over Poor Things. And honestly, over Killers of Flower Moon. I mean, I think Zone of Interest, his direction in that, especially with the subject matter, I'm sorry, Scorsese, but you got to get reined in.
Yeah, I'm not sitting here trying to stump for Scorsese for a moment. It's a really great film, and I understand the I'm okay with the fact he's nominated. I'm not mad about that. Yeah. It's really hard when you direct one of the best films of the year. How do you not nominate that person for best director? And clearly, it's got that Scorsese style. So I think you have to reward that with a nomination. And I'm not mad by it. Yeah, I'm all right with it. I'm not sitting here going, oh man, Greta Gerwig should have had that nomination. No, I'm really okay with Killers of the Flower Moon. With Scorsese getting the nomination there. I am.
Agreed.
So, such is.
Anatomy of the Fall is leagues above Barbie. Sorry.
Yes, no, it is. It is cinema. Barbie was a movie. This was cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that just leaves the last one. Sorry, did you come down on a choice on that one?
Nolan.
No, okay. And it just comes down to the last one, the big one, Best Picture, Anatomy of a Fall, American Fiction, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest. I've seen seven.
I haven't seen Past Lives, so I've seen them all except for Past Lives.
Oh, you said nine?
Zone of Interest, Poor Things.
Oh, you haven't seen Maestro. So down to eight.
Oh, sorry. I see Maestro on there now. Maestro. Yeah.
Okay. I can live with Barbie being here.
No.
Oh, really?
No. As for Best Picture, the Best Picture of the year, this is the same argument that I've had countless times with music, where people are like, oh, well, they sold a billion records. I'm like, that does not make them a good music. That does not mean that they can play the instrument well. That does not mean they're a good singer or this, that, the other, right? I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
Barbie
made a lot of money. It's enjoyable. It's not the best picture.
The things that Barbie did well. I think Ryan Gosling did an excellent job as a supporting actor. I think set and costume design was really, really strong. So it's not the storytelling elements, the things that I'm most, designed to champion. I'm an English teacher by trade, film teacher by trade. Story is my go-to. That is not Barbie's strength. Barbie's strength is the visual appeal of Barbie Land. That is the thing. And is that a big enough merit to get it on this list? I can't think of a film that deserves the spot that Barbie holds. That's my issue. So if I can't think of one, then Barbie gets my vote.
You said we have nine films here.
Ten.
Ten. And we could have just had. We could have had one less.
True. Okay, so we could have gone nine. That's a different. Okay, so if I'm dealing with the idea that this is a hard 10,
no.
Okay, so maybe part of this, we talked a lot about the narrative driving the Oscars. I do think this is okay. We gave it a nomination for Best Picture. Stay off our back. Maybe old habits die hard.
No. Compare it to the others on this list. They are all in this category where I would agree. Again, even not seeing Maestro, it's like I can see why that would be, like you said, Oscar Beatty, Best Picture. Barbie never once entered my brain. It's like, yeah, this is going to be up for Best Picture. You know, you could replace it with, everybody's complaining about, animation having its own category and everything. Fuck it. Put Spider-Verse into here over Barbie, visually appealing and striking and all these animation styles and all this stuff. You could say a lot of things about that. I mean, even direction, as complicated as it is to direct an animated film, put that in here as Best Picture. Barbie Land. I mean, you could say the Lego movie has Lego Land. I mean, what? I don't know. I feel some type of way about Barbie or bust.
You do. You do. That's why you came up with the term. I mean, you gotta remember that. I'm sitting here. I'm looking at a list of snubs, and I'm looking for the film people are clamoring that should have gone on. I really can't find one. So I think your argument about there is a little bit about The Color Purple, but
or Naiad maybe.
Naiad maybe, yeah. IndieWire. Here we go. Best film snubbed by the Oscars in 2024. While I'm looking at this briefly. What do you think about Leo? Should Leo have been on the list?
For Best Actor?
Yeah.
Having not seen Rustin and Maestro, I would pick Leo over Jeffrey Wright.
Would you?
Okay. I mean, but again, it's Leo. He's always good. I don't know. That's tough.
I got one that I'd put over Barbie now, so I'll agree with you.
Okay.
Air. I would put Air on the list.
Oh, that if that
Air came out. Air came out in February, and so people forgot about it. Air.
Wow. That's absolutely should be in this conversation for Best Picture.
Best Director.
Or, would it be adapted screenplay or original screenplay?
It'd be adapted because it's based on real life, so we'd have to give it an adapted. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, why is that not in the conversation? Absolutely. Good show.
Yeah, I'm just on this list, and it was because, Air. I thought Air was really good. I mean, then I go down my usual list and go, the greatest actor of our time, Matt Damon. He's really good. Viola Davis is really good. Yeah, this is actually quite surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a snub for sure.
Yeah, I think that's one that definitely should have got some. You know, some people were saying the Iron Claw. I like the Iron Claw. I don't think it's this. No, yeah, it was up for Golden Globes. Yeah, he got Damon gets nominated for Best Actor. Gets nominated for Best Motion Picture because they do split it up into comedy and dramas at that stage. But no, I think Ayer's got every right to feel snubbed on this one.
Yeah, I would agree. And as far as personal favorites, and I can argue for it plenty, Ayer for sure is in this conversation in my mind.
Yeah, Damon got nominated for Best Actor, and Ayer got, and the film got nominated for Best Picture at the Golden Globes, and then Viola Davis, People's Choice Awards, whatever you want to consider that. And it also got a Writers Guild of America nomination for Best Original. Oh, it was Original Screenplay, so I guess I don't know what the deal is now between what counts and what doesn't count, but there we go. I don't know. But yeah, I think Ayer's, yeah, I think there was an error in not putting Ayer up on the docket. That was a very strong movie.
Yes, absolutely. Through and through. And I've seen it a couple times since then because of how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's one I should go back to because it is on Prime. And I think it's fantastic what a little piece of independent cinema could be and should be. It's a simple story. And it's got layers. Oh, it's such a good movie. I need to go back and watch that. All right, so who would have thought at the end of my of the Oscar episode I'd be sitting here stumping for a movie not even on the list? Going, I really want to see that movie instead. So there we go. Let's go ahead. We'll let's drive this one home. The I hear the music playing. The band is telling us to get off the stage. So enjoy, folks. That's your docket. Enjoy the Oscars this year. Go check out the Scuttlebutt podcast, where you can hear other defining statements such as Barbie or bust. Where can they find the Scuttlebutt podcast, Hermes?
Appreciate it, Ian. They can find it on all of the podcast platforms, guys. I mean, if you like some gossip, if you like some current events, some politics, I'm about to go record right now with a special guest, so check it out. Join our Patreon for all the live streams, behind the scenes, all that good stuff, guys.
And if you like Hermes and the sound of his voice interacting with this voice, check out Tuesday's release. We're dropping Mystic River and talking about Oscar buzz. That's an Oscar winner in its own right. So get ready to hear a lot more of these two voices. And we'll add Liam into the mix. So there we go. There's a little preview for Tuesday. So outside of that, that's the envelope. The winners have their winners. The losers are their losers. And all that's left to do is we'll catch you on the flippity flap.
The flippity flip flop.